everybody. Welcome back to another episode of A Place in the Conversation. My name is Dan Neiswanger, and we're very glad to have you join us today. I'm here with my good friend, Nick Everhart. Nick, why don't you say hello?
Well, good morning, Pastor Dan, Pastor Williams. It's always fun to be here having these conversations together, and I look forward to learning more about Pastor Williams and his 32 years here in Kennett Square.
Yeah, and it's we are glad to have Reverend Dr. Marvin Williams with us, and he is the pastor at Second Baptist Church in Kennett Square. And so we're making a place in the conversation to learn more about him, learn more about his ministry, to learn more about Second Baptist Church. And you know, one of the things that that makes Pastor Williams a little bit unique is the 32 years in one church. That doesn't happen in this day, in this age, with very many pastors. Unfortunately, we seem to be moving around a lot quicker than that. But yet Pastor Williams has been able to stay at Second Baptist and build a relationship not only there, but with the Kennett community. And we're really looking forward to hearing what he's got to say. So so Pastor Williams, why don't you just introduce yourself to everybody, and then introduce, for those who might not be familiar, introduce Second Baptist Church to everybody.
Well, my name is Marvin T. Williams. I was not born in Kennett. I was born in Westchester, lived there for 18 years, and I spent 4 years in the Marine Corps. Then after the Marine Corps, I returned back home, and a couple of years after being home, I got married to my wife, Ruth, in 68, and we've been married going on 54 years. And then in 1991, I came to Kennett to pastor here at the Second Baptist Church on South Willow Street. And I've been there through some trying times. When I got there, there was 10 members in the church. And some way, somehow, they kept the church going. So I was installed that December 91 as their pastor, and through that we had some little growth, but then in 94 was March of 94, March the 20th, exact day, the building caught on fire. I got a phone call that evening around 11 o'clock that the church was on fire. At first, you know, I didn't believe it, didn't want to believe it, but I made my way to Kennett, and there it was. Though, with that taking place, that Saturday we met at a church, had a meeting at the Bethel AME Church on Linda Street, and that Sunday we held worship service at the Kennett Area Senior Center, and we continue on and formed up committees for talking about what we're going to do, excuse me, and the rebuilding of the church. So we was blessed with a contractor who, he told us that the Lord had put him in his heart to build a church, because he normally built houses. And so we took him at his word, and his actions proved it, because he went way out of his way to do things. Like, he had a friend that was an architect that owed him a favor, so we didn't have to pay for blueprints. And he made trips to Harrisburg and getting the papers and all that. So he was true to his what he had said. So November of 94, they started tearing the old building down, and started with the new building. The first Sunday in July 1995, we had a first worship service in the new building. We had a dedication in September. Then November the 15th, I remember dates, and the building next door where Thompson's had a place where they redid furniture, that caught on fire. And so while they were fighting that, they was pouring water on the church because, you know, buildings aren't but, I guess, maybe 9 and 10 feet apart.
Yeah.
And so when they got that far out and the fire marshal told us, well, you might have a problem. You're downstairs, maybe full of water. So I gave him the key. He went in, and when he came out, he said, no water at all. Because they were, you've seen the water. The water is about that deep in the street. They were just pouring water on it. And so what happened, the contractor said, in order to save time and get it quick, it's going to cost a little bit more money. He said, let's put up, he wanted to put up structured walls. That's what they call them, structured walls, prefab wall, and which we agreed to. And that's why we never had that water problem.
Yeah.
And so through the years that when we moved back into that building, and before we moved there, when we was meeting at the senior center and was talking about a building, and the Lord told me, he said, look, if you're just going to meet on Sunday, you don't need a building. You're going to meet here every Sunday. So let me know that we're not just going to put a building up to be just used on Sunday. We want it to be used for other things. So when we, so that, during that process, when the school year started, we started a tutoring group, which eventually became the study buddy. We were the first one that, and we started that, and that's how I got to meet Joan Holliday. And it got picked up to other churches, but we the ones that actually started that. She, in the book they had written, they mentioned that. So through the years, our numbers have went up and went down. But one thing about the members of Second Baptist Church, they are very, very friendly.
Yeah.
That they're loving. But we have had a lot of people visit the church, looking for a church, but they never stayed because they make the mistake and look at the numbers.
Yeah.
And like I had preached a sermon not too long ago. Don't let the numbers fool you. Cause some people think I'm crazy because I'm all saying what the Lord had told me. What the Lord had said to me to tell the people that he has been with them always, he said, from the beginning to now. So that's why the numbers never got great, but the Lord that kept them going on.
Yeah.
And
I tell you that's you're speaking truth in a great way, because I know that. When I retired a couple of years ago, one of the things that I got to do is I got to go to different churches all over the place, all around Kennett on Sunday morning. And when I would come to Second Baptist, I always knew, like, you know, that I was going to be received well, I was going to be greeted, and I felt like I was at home. And, you know, some other places you would go, and and you didn't quite know if you were going to be received well or how you were going to be received. And that was never a question. You know, for my wife and myself, whenever we would show up at Second Baptist, we were always received well. And one of the things that's impressed me over the years, you know, I've only been a part of the Kennett community for the past 7 years, but as you and I have developed a relationship and I've come to understand a little bit more about what Second Baptist is all about, is the amount of ministry things that you guys are involved in. You know, the soup lunches that you would do, and the collecting of clothes, and there's just, you know, you're right, it's not a large number of people, but there's activity that is, that's helping the wider community. And that's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing to see. It's an encouraging thing to see.
But the thing about that, I can't take credit for any of that. It was the people's doings.
Yeah.
All the different things that we do, it was their idea, not mine.
Yeah.
And everybody told me, no, I'm just reaping the benefits of what they're doing. Before the pandemic, every Saturday before Mother's Day, we used to have a mother's luncheon. And what we do, we bring in the mother. We invite mothers from the different churches, especially the older ones. And we would recognize those that anywhere in the 80s and 90s. And we would give them nice gifts. And when the thing was over, every woman that was there, mother was there, they all left with a gift. And all these gifts that... And when that day was over, the next week, they started for the next year. I mean, these were some nice gifts. I was surprised. But yet, these are gifts. Nothing was brought. And they received these things through donations. And somebody had asked me, how you manage to do that? I said, well, you know, I try to tell people, God's word is true. If you do right, like the Lord says you do, he'll do right for you.
Yep.
I said, just like he told Abraham, I'm going to bless you so you can be a blessing. And that's one of the things I had instilled in the people there at Second Baptist. And for the 32 years I've been there, I have not once have I stood in that pulpit and talked about money and giving. Because I personally feel you can't make nobody give. People give to where they are spiritually. So I believe, and it's working, just feed them the word of God and let them grow, and they give. And the people have been giving. And one of the things I brag about, because we have, like I said, not a lot of members, but the members there, Second Baptist, for some reason, if they can't make this Sunday, when they come the following Sunday, they bring their offering for this Sunday and for the past Sunday.
Yep.
And they have no, they just, when they see a need, they react. Mm-hmm. I don't have to get up. I say, we need it. No. I let them, and because everything is done. But it's been good years there. And, you know, And somebody had said to me, "Well, you got these degrees and all that. Won't you go?" I said, "The Lord brought me here, and the Lord's gonna tell me when to leave." Because you know, I've been offered and seen things where people try to get you to come to their church. They're looking for a pastor, and the money they offered was good money. But I would, like I said, I only go to where I feel led by the Lord.
Yeah.
They said, look what you're best. I said, look, life is more than money.
Well, on behalf of the Kennett community, I want to say thank you for sticking around for 32 years, because you have been a blessing. You've been a blessing to the greater Kennett community. You've been a blessing to those people and the people of Second Baptist. And, you know, it's one thing to say, you know, that the people do everything, but they have to have a leader who models. That models all of that, and Pastor Williams, you model all of that, and that's a beautiful thing. I want to ask you a question about, you know, it's for somebody who's been in Kennett Square for 32 years, and you've been involved with the whole idea of caring for people and ministering to those in need. What's some of the biggest changes you've seen in 32 years?
Well, when I first came to Second Baptist, the apartment buildings across the street was all everybody. Matter of fact, that neighborhood, this is when the arguments I got in with the other pastors in the community, because that was, it was Second Baptist, for some reason, it was in what I call a white neighborhood, because everybody lived there was white. And so that's what one of the things that I seen some changes for the good, but then, like I said, things are come along. I can say Kennett is a whole lot better than some other towns and cities that I've been in, for as the relationship between the races. But there are some things in the that I ran into when I first come here that was really troubling. I had run-ins with pastors from the different churches when I go to the meetings, and I just wouldn't sit there. If something was being said I didn't agree with, I would speak. You know, I just couldn't sit there and let it go by. Because, like, when they went to build the Y there on Ray Street at the meetings, and one of the problems I have with the Y is really a lot of people can't afford to belong to the Y. And one of the things I brought up, because I said, you're going to build this building here on Ray Street, and yet right up there on Linda Street, you have kids living up there that could look out their back window and see this building and won't be able to afford to come to the building. And, you know, they got to come. So I'm only being, like I said, only being truthful. You're going to build this building, like, you got to make it so that those who are less fortunate and don't have the means can still use this facility. You know, it's, like I said, young YMCA, young man's christening, is still called that.
Yeah.
And, but then they said, well, you shouldn't. I said, look, I've been around for a while, and I remember growing up in Westchester, the YMCA up on High Street. I wasn't even allowed to go in there. I said, look, I can tell you, I remember when, and I just don't want, I want things to change, but you got, when you get the opportunity to make the change needs to be made. All right, then when Mabel Smith started this Martin Luther King breakfast, I was on the committee in at the beginning, and you know, then Exxon, whatever it's called, built that building up there going out of Kennett, and they had this a vice president that came up from down south. He spent a few months here. He was a black fella. And he came to our meeting, and when he came to our meeting, he made a statement that made me laugh, but some others didn't think it was funny. He made a statement, said, look, I didn't think there was any black people lived in Kennett. And they said, what do you mean by that? He said, when I went to out the Walmart, I saw white people and Mexicans. He said, when I went to the Y, that's all I saw there. I didn't see any people there that looked like him. And I just laughed. They didn't think it was funny, but it's the truth. I said something. I know the Bible, Jesus said, you should know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. But he didn't tell you all, but sometimes truth hurts.
Yeah.
Like, I remember that movie, A Few Good Men, Jack Nicholson told Tom, you can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the problem.
Yeah. And that's it, right? The truth, you know, like Jesus, when he says that, you know, the truth will set you free. Sometimes that truth is uncomfortable for us, and we don't want to hear it. And it's easier for us to push that truth away, and to come up with excuses for it, and to kind of explain things away, rather than to sit in our discomfort, and wrestle with the truth, and then come up with real answers, and that's one of the things that I have grown to appreciate about you over the years, as you and I have been just having conversations, just the two of us, as we've been having conversations in small groups, you don't shy away from speaking your truth, but you always do it with a level of grace, and with a level of there's no anger or malice with it. It's just kind of matter of fact. It's just, yeah, this has been my experience. This is what I have seen. Just as you were just sharing, about the why, and people not being able, young kids, not being able to afford going into the Y. You know, there's no difference between saying, hey, you can't come in here because of the color of your skin, or saying, hey, you're priced out of this because you don't have the means to pay for it. The same thing is happening. The discrimination is taking place. It's just happening in a different way. Mm. In one way, we're pointing and naming the color of the skin and saying, hey, because of the color of your skin, you can't come in the door. And another way, it's a little bit, maybe it feels a little gentler to some people, because you can't afford it, you can't come in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the truth is, it's the same exact thing, just done in a slightly different kind of way. And you know, and you're naming that truth. And I find all of that very, honestly, sometimes it's uncomfortable, but it's very helpful. And I appreciate you for it.
Well, I personally believe, and I have told other people, one of the reasons why houses cost so much, see, is for that very reason. See, when I brought my house in 76, brand new house, I brought acre and quarter ground. It only cost me $27,000. But I come to realize one of the reasons why housing went up, because they found out that some people would pay more money just so they didn't have to live next door to me. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons. And now I look at the things now, the way these different houses they're building, especially what they call so-called affordable houses. The price of affordable housing is a joke.
Yeah.
There's nothing affordable about them.
Yeah.
And especially with the wages that people are getting paid, it's a sad thing when an individual can work 40 hours plus and really don't have enough money to keep a roof over his head.
Yeah.
See, I've worked for Wyeth Laboratories for 29 and a half years before they closed up. Now, in 1997, January the 7th, when they had that meeting and said, that's it, I was supervisor of a second shift manufacturing. And everybody working under me, remember the year, 1997, everybody working under me, all the men and women working under me, they was all making $25 an hour, 1997. And now, people, you tell them that there, that would be good money now. I said, yeah, but we was making that in 1997.
Yeah.
But the thing is, with the things that are taking place, you know, because I love to read. I read. I call myself some way a historian, because I like history. And I read about the Reconstruction and all them periods in American history. And I tell people, I see things. What happened with Reconstruction is taking place again in this country. I said, because the Civil Rights Movement, all the things that was gained in the 60s are being lost now. And we had the voting rights thing, and the Supreme Court a few years back gutted most of that. And what did you see right away when they made it so the state started what they call that gerrymandering, I said, now, I told one of them, we don't have to count how many jello beans in a jar anymore, but they're just making it just as hard for people to vote.
Yeah.
Taking away the drop boxes and things like that, doing away with voting precincts, it's making it harder.
Yeah. Hey, for those who might not understand your reference to jelly beans in a jar, explain what that is.
What they had done in a lot of the states, especially down south, because they couldn't stop us from voting, so what they do, they made it, for us to qualify vote, they put these little things in the stumbling blocks in there. And if, of course, you look at a jar of jelly beans, who's going to guess how many jelly beans in a jar? A lot of different things like that to stop you from being able to vote.
Yeah. So when you when African American people went into the polling place before they were allowed to vote, they had to look at the jar full of jelly beans and actually guess the right number of jelly beans.
To just to register to vote.
Yeah.
You see, and they're making it more difficult now. And
So Pastor Williams, if you could talk to a younger you, you know, or if you could talk to, somebody who's in their 20s or 30s today, and you just had a few minutes to sit with them and to say, hey, this is important. You need to pay attention to this. And here's how you need to be moving through this world right now. What would you say to them?
I would tell them to vote in every election, not just general elections. I said all of them elections are important because these individuals that are in these positions that making laws against you, they're there because somebody voted them in and you didn't vote. So you voted for them. I just, like I said, when I tell people, elections are important. I said, people died so you can vote. And you got to vote every election. It's not just just for the president. I said, you got to vote every election. Because it's important. See, you vote and you get the right people in their office. And see, you see all these bad people in there. They're in there because you didn't vote. You didn't vote. So somebody voted them in. And this country, like I said, I love history. When I listen to them they talking about the Federalist Papers and all them things, I sit there, I know what they're talking about. A lot of people don't know because right away, a lot of, come to find out, they don't teach civics in school anymore. So they don't have a clue what's going on there. But this country, in the founding of this country, them people that met in war and down in Philadelphia, they mostly all of them had money. They were rich people. And it was rich people who got the poor people to fight the king. And when they set up this government, they set it up to favor the rich. I said, this is the only country in the world that we go vote for the leader, the president of the country, and really, then it all ends up to electoral college. And I said, you need to read and see why they set up this electoral college. See, because they felt that the people weren't smart enough to put the person in, the right person in office. That's what, like I said, how can a person get all the votes, majority of the votes, and lose the election?
Yeah.
You gotta know, I try to tell people. I know I don't talk politics from the pulpit, but when I'm from the pulpit, I try to explain to people, and especially young people. And young people, I have a great-grandson, 11 years old, try to tell him, everything's not all right. I said, yeah, you have your friend Tucker and all that. He comes to stays at the house and all that, but everything's not all right in this country. It's not. And I said, I told him, like I tell some people, we are no longer in chains, but the color of her skin are new shackles. See, I said, like we just finished celebrating Juneteenth. I said, like I told her, I have problems. I celebrate, have problems celebrating because I'm free, yet I'm not free. And it just happened when I was talking at the time with Joan Holliday, and she was trying to explain, I was explaining to her, and just then that's when that young black boy got shot because he knocked on the wrong door. And why did he get shot? Because of the color of his skin. See, things change, but more they stay the same. I spent 4 years in the Marine Corps. And in the midst of that time, the things I went through when I was in uniform, and I signed up to fight for this country, took the same oath that everybody else takes, just like the same one the President of the United States takes. Raised my right hand and took that oath to defend the Constitution of this country. October 1962, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. I was over there sitting in the NCO club, and a guy comes and said, "You know they're having a Ku Klux Klan meeting in the barracks I was sleeping in." Yeah, they was having a meeting like that in the barracks that I slept in. Bad enough that they had it anywhere, but it was in the barracks that I slept in. And just show you things we have to put up with and the things I try to, people to open our eyes. Things are changing, but things aren't changing. It's just doing things in a different way. Maybe they don't call you names anymore, but some people still feel the same way. I said, the only difference between now and that back then, at least I knew how the individuals felt about me because they let me know. Yeah. But now, a person can be smiling in my face and can't stand the ground I'm walking on.
Yeah.
But I didn't mean to go down that path, but I have a lot of things on my mind because my wife told me I need to quit watching the TV and the things that are going on and you know them. But I'm concerned. I have a great grandson. I see other young blacks and all that. I'm concerned and I'm afraid to where things are going. I said, we're going to end up in the same situation they ended up when they took things away from our people that we got during the Reconstruction. I see it, Pastor Dan, I see it happen. I just slowly but surely, the country is heading back down that path again. And for some reason, the party of Lincoln, the Republican Party now has turned against us. And you know, everybody talk about loop. Dude, you know, most black people, Afro-Americans, they go, you know, most of us are conservative in our thoughts.
Yeah.
We're not liberals. We're conservative. Most black people are conservative, especially the older black folks. I don't know about these young ones now, but we're conservative. We look at things. Yeah. I know how I'm reticent now, but I voted Republican at times. I vote for what I think is the best individual. I was independent for a while, but then I said, but that took me out of the primary, so I chose a party. But when I go to vote, I go for who I think the best person is. I don't look to see what the party is.
Yeah.
I see that, and but in my prayer, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm fearful of these things. And a couple of years ago, I come to find out my great-grandfather, Robert Pleasant, was born in Charlottesville, Virginia. I was going to go to Charlottesville to check out, try to find out more of family history, but that's when they had that big protest, so I never got there. Because the reason why I was concerned about that, they had a thing on public television a couple of years ago about this lady was a slave from Charlottesville, Virginia. Her name was Mary Pleasance, and she escaped and went to California and became rich. But wherever she did, she became rich. So I'm thinking, my wife said, well, your grandfather, but maybe. I said, that's why I'm going to get there and see. I said, maybe his father or maybe his grandfather might have been on that plantation where, you know, they, most of the last names we have, they received from the, mm-hmm. from the, wherever plantation they was on. I said, maybe, I just see some more of my family history, because think back, because a couple of weeks, I'm going to a family reunion, and I'm curious, but I'm, like I said, I'll repeat myself. I like the town of Kennett, but I'm still afraid because, like I said, we still haven't come together like we should, especially when it comes to worshiping the Lord. Yeah. And now, I'm finishing up now. I made some of these people in Kennett mad, people of color mad, that go to white churches. I asked them, now, your family belongs, most of them family belong to one of the churches on Linden Street, or some even out of Second Baptist. I said, why do you go? Now, the Lord bless you, you got a good job and all that. Why didn't you go back to the church you grew up in? And then they told me it's because the church they grew up in doesn't have the things. They don't offer the things that they get in other churches. I said, you know what I told them? You know, if you would go back to the church you grew up in and take your money there, they would be able to have the same things. They just looked at me. I said,
I tell you, I'm with you on that. You know, we've raised a generation of people who shop for church, just like they shop for everything else, and we don't invest in the community and that's a difficult thing. So I feel you there. But Pastor Williams, I do need to tell you, I just every time we're together, I am just so thankful for your voice. And I'm so thankful that you are willing to share from the fullness of who you are, from the completeness of who you are, from the depth of who you are. And you allow me, you allow us a window in to see you know, just bits and pieces of your experience, and then to feel the concern that you have for your kids, for your grandkids, and for where our country is, and for the way that we could be so much better if we could learn how to be in relationship with each other. And you know, that's a piece and a part of what we're trying to do here, you know, at a place in the conversation on this podcast, is to provide the place to be able to have these kind of conversations and just say, yeah, look, we need to learn from each other. And so Nick and I thank you for, thank you for your sharing and everything. Mm-hmm. Nick, do you have a question that you want to?
Oh, I have a lot of questions, but we need a couple more hours.
Yeah, so, well, that's okay. Go ahead. You got a question?
No, I think I'll refrain.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Not just one question. Just one.
Well, I guess we talked recently to a man who's a pastor of a Hispanic ministry at Willowdale Chapel. And they, you know, Willowdale Chapel has encouraged Hispanics to come there to worship. And you said that you think that more Black people should be going to Black churches. But to me...
No, you misunderstood.
Maybe I did.
No, it's okay. Not that more Black people. Is that people have the right to go there. See, I never know one thing. Black people of color are more apt to go and join a white church instead of... But white people won't. Less, most likely will not come and take part.
True.
Join in a Black church.
Right. Well, I guess what I was going to say is that the benefit of that is that those white people get to see some diversity and recognize that we're all the same. And so there's a real benefit, in my mind, to integrating white churches with people of different colors.
Yes, we got to come together. Look, see, in order for you to know and understand, you got to be around me.
Yes.
Now, hey, you're not going to learn anything far off. You got to spend time with me. We got to communicate with one another. You know, get mad at me just because of the way I look. Hey, let's King said, get to know me.
Yeah.
Get to know, because like I said, there's good, you say, there's some good and bad and all. We got good ones, and we all, amen. We're all not bad, and we're all not good in all the races.
Yeah.
But you watch the news, see, the news, news doesn't help much, especially when it comes to Black youth. They'll show all the Black youth doing all kind of crazy stuff in a minute. They don't show you all you don't hear about the good people look and think they're all like that. Yeah. No, we're not all like, and like I said, I don't want them people around me. I do, man, I don't want them around me either. That one thing. You know, when my wife and I, we were looking for a house, this real estate man in Westchester, I told him, don't come talk about you found a nice house for me. I want to know, would you live in that house? He said, it's nice. I said, would you live in it? He couldn't. I said, I don't want to see the house then. I said, I'm going to buy a house. If you could, you want me to live in it, but yet you won't live in it, I don't want to see the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm tough. That's rough, man.
Yeah.
But just the way I am, you know, because, like I said, I've been around a few years, and I remember that, especially when a certain areas, you know, it'd be in trouble if you looked up at a white person. I was down. I spent some time down there in the Marine Corps, you know, in the South, you know. And I was smart enough that when I was there, I got a North Carolina driver's license, because I found out what happened when I showed my Pennsylvania driver's license. It was kind of rough.
Yeah.
That policeman got real nasty.
Yeah. Well, you know, Pastor Williams, again, you know, the truth will set you free, right? And I appreciate the, I don't know whether it's the number of years, I don't know whether it's your character, just as the way that God has created you, but you have an ability to speak truth and to speak it gently, and so there's value in that, and I appreciate that. What time are services on Sunday morning?
10 a.m.
10 a.m.
Yeah.
And what's the address again?
132 South Willow Street.
Okay, 132 South Willow Street, 10 a.m. And, you know, every time that I have been to be a part of services, I have been received well, welcomed well, and I guarantee you that you will be the same. And it's a special place. And that is just very active in the life of Kennett, and any opportunity that you have to be around Pastor Williams and to listen to what he's got to share and to say, you need to grab it and to take that opportunity. And he's just for the past 32 years has been a blessing to Kennett, a blessing to Second Baptist Church, and there's a lot of things that we didn't even touch on today that he's been a piece and a part of bridging the community, being one of those. When bridging the community started, Pastor Williams was one of the people who helped to get that started, and we're just very thankful for him and for his service. And so, Pastor Williams, thank you for being with us today. And everybody, till next time, when we come together again, may you just be abundantly aware of the Spirit of God, alive and well, and at work in your world.